It proves again Bob Enyart's axiom that the scientists who make it to the top of evolutionary cosmology and biology, that they're the ones who can tell the biggest, most ridiculous, outrageous, stupefying lie with the straightest face.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. Fred, we've got to talk about the WNBA.
The WNBA. Now, that's going to be interesting.
We've got to talk
about
the
National Basketball Association.
You got that. Very good, Fred. Very. Now, but despite that, Fred, we've got to talk about the WNBA, but it's not about basketball, of course.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with
it. Hardly ever is with that organization.
What? It rarely ever has been. But, Fred, they have figured out a way to get people to watch the WNBA. And the thing is just don't focus on the basketball. Who would have thought? Right? Anyway, Fred, not just that, though. We've got an allegation about some black holes out there. We've got to clarify that. There's a recent report on the immune system in people that live past 100, Fred. 100, I said. And then we've got artificial intelligence correcting papers, peer-reviewed clinical, journal papers going back like generations. And Fred, scientists have once again, and for the first time, discovered an explanation for the Cambrian explosion. You know the Cambrian explosion, right?
Yeah,
that's when all the animals suddenly exploded like a biological shotgun blast out of nowhere onto the fossil record. Yeah.
Yeah. And we thought, well, let's start this show with what we've been doing occasionally. You know, we have our interesting fact of the week segment. We'll get to that later in the show. But we also have our Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
Oh, yes, Fred.
I really thought that this was going to be a really tight race between the WNBA and this Cambrian explosion story. I'm not sure which one wins the Knucklehead Science Award of the Week, but, you know, we'll just give them both to the audience, and maybe you can leave in the comments which one you think deserves number one spot for a Knucklehead Science Award of the Week.
Yeah, so, Fred, if this were live, we would do a poll right now live. And we would take a vote to see whether we lead with the Cambrian explosion or whether we lead with the WNBA. And I'm guessing, Fred, just based on the mindset of the average American, that the WNBA would win. And Fred, that's the only way they could win.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe I think they would win for sure. But if we told them that the Cambrian explosion story is all about poop, that might change, you know, the voting patterns.
You've introduced poop as a topic, Fred. Now, I mean, not now, it's a toss-up.
I wasn't the first one. Remember, Dr. Tom Dykstra brought that up with bacteria in soil.
That's true. So, that's true. We have addressed the issue of poop. It's not that we're afraid of that type of issue.
Yeah.
In fact, it's well known in radio, television, broadcasting, podcasting too, I'm sure, that the topic of poop, I mean, it draws attention. It's just a fact. People can't resist to find out what's going on if you mention that. It's
okay,
almost,
let's spin the wheel. It's going to land on either poop or WNBA.
That's right. So let's which go ahead draws and land it on
poop. We're going to land. We landed on poop, Doug.
All right. That's what we open with. Not to be sexist or anything against the WNBA. We want to state from the very beginning that it was a random spin of a random wheel. It wasn't
WNBA. 50-50 shot here. So this is a paper published this month in Trends in Ecology and Evolution, and it's titled The Cambrian Fecal Revolution, Fueling the Cambrian Radiation. Doug, you can't make this stuff up. So So Flinders University, Doug? What is it? Flinders? You know,
I believe it's Flinders. You don't pronounce the R. Flinders.
Flinders, okay.
Yeah.
So they're promoting the research, and it says scientists now credit the buildup of animal excrement as a, quote, key cause of the Cambrian explosion. Again, that remarkable part of the fossil record where pretty much all of the major animal body plans just suddenly appear with no sign of evolution.
Right.
So, you know, the idea is that once animals developed digestive systems and started producing fecal pellets, those pellets sank through the ocean and carried carbon. Boy, it's tough reading this, Doug, and keeping a straight face. These pellets sank through the ocean and carried carbon, nitrogen, phosphorus, and iron into deeper water. That fertilized deeper ecosystems, supposedly encouraging animals to diversify.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep going, Fred. I'm on the edge of my seat. Wow.
So first of all, you know, we've learned from Dr. Tom Dykstra, you know, that fecal matter really can, you know, it recycles nutrients and it can be beneficial. We learned about that in healthy soil.
Oh, yeah.
So nobody disputes that. But notice, Doug, they have a problem here. So to get this proposed mechanism started, don't they already need animals with guts, a digestive system, feeding behavior, you know, metabolism, yeah, and you know, that back into your body part that,
yeah,
you know, actually is
the whole thing.
All you in need itself. You need the whole gambit.
Yeah.
And somehow, Doug, the waste products from those already complex animals are invoked to help explain the explosive diversification of complex animals. Awesome. So it sounds like Darwin's tree of life, it needed a little fertilizer. That's all it needed, Doug.
Yeah, right. And of course, where the fertilizer came from, don't ask, kids. Move on. The egress is this way. Just keep moving. Fred, that's like, you sounded almost like a circus barker there in the middle of that story. Like, how you kept a straight face. It proves, again, Bob Enyart's axiom that the scientists who make it to the top of evolutionary cosmology and biology, that they're the ones who can tell the biggest, most ridiculous, outrageous, stupefying lie with the straightest face.
Yeah.
And the Fred, you should win an award for reading through that story with relatively straight face. You didn't make it through the whole thing without a chuckle, but
well, still, yeah, and it's amazing cool. How many times we have, you know, we repeat, you know, that axiom of Bob's. He was so right.
Absolutely.
So, they go and they turn one of the greatest problems in the evolutionary story into what researchers themselves call a fecal revolution. So that's, I guess, my leaning. I don't know. Boy, it's tough with the NBA. That's going to be challenging. But this definitely deserves a Knucklehead Science Award.
Right.
You know, that the Cambrian explosion was fueled by poop.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Here's your Knucklehead Science Award of the week.
Okay, well, I want to give my, maybe the Knucklehead Science Award, that's going to be your award, and mine will be the Bonehead of the Week Award, Bonehead Science of the Week Award.
It's the Bonehead Science of the Week.
We might need to trademark these, Fred, so that other people will. So I've got my suggestion for the Bonehead Science Award of the Week goes to an organization that apparently has a very serious scientific problem. That's right. Fred, this is an organization that runs a professional basketball league exclusively for women. Fred, it's in their name. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, woman is the first word. Is it woman or women's? Women's. Women's is the first word in the name of the organization. And members of the organization over this past week or two have not been able to define what a woman is.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Well, their collective bargaining agreement says this, and I'm quoting it. Only players who are women are eligible to play in the WNBA.
Yeah,
now, that seems
Fred,
pretty straightforward, Doug.
Well, that assumes that you know what a woman is. That statement assumes that the person reading that statement would have to already know what women are. And I don't know that the people who wrote that statement, Fred, I don't know that they ever thought that that would be an issue. How long has the WNBA been around? Has it been around for longer than the transgender insanity that started in around 2013 or so?
Well, I guess as far as I'm concerned, too long, but I digress.
Well, I apologize to all of the WNBA fans out there, but I'm not aware of when the league started or where they play. I only know the players who have either been beaten up or have been beating on other players. That's the only way I know the NBA, the WNBA. And I only know the management and league members because, well, Fred, of this story, because they've actually issued press releases.
The only reason I knew about it was somehow they had a game in Denver once. I don't think Denver even has a team, but this goes back, like, I don't know, 20 years, and I think my daughter was playing in some basketball little kids league, and so somehow I ended up in one of those games. Oh. And all I remember was some angry lesbians seemed to be all around us. You know,
oh, yeah.
So that was what I remember.
Oh, well, I mean, that's...
I don't think we stayed for the whole game.
I think we cleared
out. I think we cleared out at the end of the first quarter.
Well, that seems to be the warp and woof of the WNBA is all around anger and lesbianism and then anger, I think. And then there is some basketball in there, Fred, but when you miss layups like that, I mean, really? I'm going to watch that, please. Oh, anyway.
So they have a big problem with the definition of what a woman is, right? So it's pretty funny that you've got former NBA players, you know, are signing up. They want to be eligible for next year's draft to be drafted into the WNBA because they've identified themselves as women so that they could play in the WNBA.
That's right. Now, this one fella, Fred, Enes Kanter Freedom, I've heard of him. Now, not a big NBA fan. I'm not going to claim I knew who he was before he retired. But since he's become an advocate of anti-communism, and he said some really cool things that I like. And he changed his name to Enes Kanter Freedom to remind people that he's so happy to be in America and free. But this other guy, Fred, Royce White, I mean, I just had never heard of the guy. Looks like a fine, upstanding human being, but I just never heard of him.
Yeah, I'm kind of a fan of the NBA. I mean, I follow the Nuggets, you know, and I used to have season tickets. But yeah, I don't recognize either of these guys. I'm surprised you knew that first guy was. So these are probably, I haven't looked anything up. I'm guessing they were probably bench warmers, you know, they came off the bench. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but
well,
these are guys.
They definitely were not. They were not franchise guys. They were not even.
No,
they were
definitely not franchise guys. They're definitely not household names. Yeah, bench players. You know, it kind of reminds me of Craig Hodges. Remember him? The guy for the Bulls. So Larry Bird was really good at, you know, he's obviously a great basketball player, and he'd win this three-point competition.
Yeah.
Well, Craig Hodges won it in 1990 because Bird was injured. And so Hodges, they mentioned that. It's like, do you think your award's diminished because Bird wasn't here to compete? And he goes, well, when Bird is healthy, he knows where to find me. You know what Bird responded?
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
At the end of the Bulls bench. Anyways, had to slip that one in there. So these guys are bench warmers, but it's hilarious that what they're doing is just really pointing out the problem that the WNBA has. They can't define what a woman is. You know, maybe we'll take this to the Supreme Court and ask that Ketanji Brown Jackson. Oh. You know, remember her?
Can you provide a definition for the word woman?
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
I can't.
You can't?
Not in this context.
So
I'm not a biologist.
How does someone like that get on the Supreme Court when they can't tell you what a woman is?
Yeah, it's Fred, it's astonishing insanity is what it is, and it's. I mean, yeah, we have to laugh about it, Fred. Otherwise, it's terrifying to realize how close to the edge of the abyss civilization could be when you can't even define the sex of another human being based on, you know, like their sex.
Yeah.
It's just astonishing.
Well, you know, and some time ago, Ryan and I did a Creation Magazine show, and there was an article in there about Richard Dawkins. So, you know, old Richard Dawkins, he's the
bulwark
of evolution. Well, so, you know, he's this famous evolutionary biologist. Well, when they asked him about biological sex, he said, as a biologist, there are two sexes, and that's all there is to it, male and female. So here's a guy that probably 95% of the time we don't agree with on Real Science Radio. Well, here's a case where he's actually right. We have to mark this on the calendar, Doug.
We're
this in rare agreement with Richard Dawkins, and it got him into hot water with some science organizations for him making this stand.
Yeah.
But you look at when I saw this, and Richard Dawkins, and he's actually coming out again against this whole thing about more than two sexes. You just think of all the things that he himself gets spectacularly wrong and the things he promotes, and you wonder why we end up in a culture like we have now, where people even questioning what a woman is.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins is the fountainhead, one of the fountainheads, of the denial of reality, which starts with denying the obvious that there's a God. If you deny there's God, there's no limit to the insanity that you'll pull civilization to. And Richard Dawkins is shocked at it. You know what he reminds me of, Fred? He reminds me of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton being shocked by the Democrat Socialists of America. And I'm thinking, how are you shocked? You people built this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, Dawkins.
That's a good analogy. Yeah, same thing.
The thing about evil is it tends to eat its own. So you shouldn't be shocked. And you know what we can hope, Fred, is that the insanity becomes so insane that it could drive a guy like Richard Dawkins, maybe Hillary Clinton, maybe Barack Obama, to actually reconsider their denial of the obvious God that exists and created all this. And maybe they would even find grace and forgiveness in his son, Jesus Christ. That's what we can hope for these poor people. It's just, it's funny to laugh at, Fred, but it is also sad. So it's a serious thing.
Yeah, it is. So maybe they'll live to 110, and we can talk about the, you know, the study from Nature Magazine that just came out a few weeks ago when they looked at this. But before we do that, Doug, I did want to slip in the interesting fact of the week.
I gotcha. Okay. So have we already done my Bonehead Science Award of the Week? Is that, don't I?
So your Bonehead one is the WNBA. So which is the better, biggest award of the week, the Bonehead WNBA thing or the Knucklehead Cambrian Poop thing? You know,
so
leave your comments. Let us know what you think deserves the, you know, the top of the crown. I don't know what we call it, the grand Knucklehead.
Well, who gets top billing? Poop or girls basketball? You can't ask it more simply than that. Okay. All right, Fred, that means I'm ready for the interesting fact. Lay it on me.
So, Doug, here is the interesting fact of the week, and it comes from none other than Tony Robinson, who we've had on the show before about IVF and NAPRO technology. Thank you, Tony, for sending this in. So, Doug, what is it that tells a beaver you need to build a dam?
Beavers don't talk. It's not like they have conversations. For Tony to suggest that someone is talking to this beaver tells me that Tony is setting me up. He's setting me up. All right, so.
So what compels a beaver to build a dam?
Oh, no, Fred, I'm only joking. I think that I do not believe that it's impossible that beavers and other animals perceive something very much like language, if not actual language. Anyway,
okay.
But that's a whole different topic. So what tells the beaver?
Is it seeing a hole in a dam? Is it water level dropping, feeling the current?
Okay, now wait a second. What tells the beaver he needs to build a dam, or what tells the beaver? Read me the question again, Fred. I need to be refreshed.
What tells a beaver you need to build a dam?
What tells a beaver you need to build a dam? The fact that he's very wet.
It's actually the sound of running water.
The sound of running water. Well, I was in the ballpark. I was in the ballpark.
No, not quite, though. So researchers discovered that the sound itself can trigger the beaver's dam-building behavior. They could play a recording of running water near a captive beaver, and the beaver would start trying to stop it up, even though the sound wasn't actually coming from a leaking dam.
Wow.
So apparently to a beaver, running water sounds like an alarm. Somebody get me a stick.
Wow, that is pretty cool. That is amazing. And so the sound of running water.
Yeah.
So that would not qualify as language, right, to us human beings. But the creator of the universe designed systems in the infrastructure that are way more sophisticated than anything we understand. Our language is probably the most advanced and the most useful expression of those systems. But there are other systems of communications going on that as we look into them, Fred, I just got to thank Tony. I mean, that, again, the glory of God that he could build that into the system, that the beaver could hear the water and he could know. And what's really cool, Fred, is that we, through scientific experiment, that we could figure that out. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, speaking of language, you know, linguists, they really can't trace how language itself evolved. They can't trace it back. So, I mean, that's just one of many, many examples of, you know, problems with this whole atheistic mindset that, again, leads you to believe things like Cambrian poop and, you know, more than one, multiple sexes and guys joining the WNBA.
It's almost as strange as people watching the WNBA. But no, Fred, I want to be kind. But that reminds me, Fred, of a Bible verse. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to find it real fast because it's in Numbers. Numbers, how often have you read Numbers? It's a tough
read. It's an interesting book. I've probably read it a couple times.
Yes, yes. Anyway, in Numbers, you remember there's the story that all the kids know because Balaam's donkey speaks. And so it's typically, I mean, I always perceive that as God miraculously speaking through the donkey or miraculously causing the donkey to say what God wanted him to say. That's how I've always perceived the story. But Fred, one of my kids pointed out to me that when you actually read the story, there's nothing in the story that indicates that God put any words in the donkey's mouth. Or that God was like talking through the donkey. Anyway, it just says that the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey. And she said to Balaam. And then when you read what the donkey said, anyway, it's just really interesting. That's why I was saying, I'm not going to say that animals can't actually perceive language. I'm just not willing to say that based on this. And
why is there a brain cell floating in my head that said there's a talking pig on Hee Haw?
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Hey, by the way, so have you heard of Karsten Brasch? I think I'm saying his name right. Karsten Brasch.
That's a person's name.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just like these NBA players that no one's ever heard of that are signing up for the WNBA. Well, the reason I bring up his name is because, do you remember tennis stars Serena and Venus Williams? Everybody knows who they are, right? I mean, they were the top tennis players in the world.
Right.
Each of them played this Karsten Brasch. He was ranked 203rd in the world among men's tennis players.
Oh.
And he beat both of them.
Get out of here.
Just to give you an idea of the gulf between men and women at the top of their sports, it's not even close. So these bench players, unknown players in the NBA come to the WNBA, they'll just completely dominate.
Oh, and Fred, you know? I would watch that. So, you know, just I'm just going to put that out there. If anyone at the league is considering whether or not to take them up on it, it'll definitely get you some eyeballs.
Yeah. Well, maybe after, you know, LeBron, I think he's, what, 72 now? So maybe maybe he'll go to the WNBA. You know, I think LeBron at 70 would probably dominate the WNBA, even though I think he's actually, what, 43? something like that. But anyways.
Yeah, Fred, he's significantly younger than either one of us, so keep that in mind. But he's old in basketball years.
Yeah. Well, speaking of codgers,
all right,
let's get to the 110-year, this study from Nature magazine that has to do with looking at centurions. Is that right, Doug?
I believe it's called centenarians. But
centenarians.
Fred, not just centenarians. This story's about super centenarians. Super centenarians. That's somebody who lives to 110.
Okay.
That's pretty impressive these days.
Yeah. Okay, so what's this story all about? This is recently from Nature magazine, right?
Yes. Nature magazine. Apparently in Japan, there are people who live very old. And so they organized a study, a particular study in Japan, looking at 28 people, Fred. 8 of them were between the ages of 70 and 99. 10 of them were centenarians, 100 to 109. And 10 were super centenarians, 110 or older. Older than that, Fred. And they focused on a rare kind of immune cell called a CD4 cytotoxic T lymphocyte.
Oh, that one. I think I looked at that the other day.
Sure. Yeah. I was just talking about that down at the coffee shop. But Fred, people have heard of T cells, right? And they know that they're involved with our adaptive immune system. But this particular class of CD4 cell, it's unusual because it can directly kill targeted cells. And in the younger elderly group, these CD4 killer cells were only about 4% of the T cell population. Then among the centenarians, they were higher, about 10%. And then among the super centenarians, these killer cells were almost 20%, about 18%. So pretty remarkable increase in the levels of these killer T cells in the immune system.
Yeah, so the immune system, these guys have more of this like killer T cell. That's interesting. So we tend to talk about aging exclusively as deterioration, and obviously that's happening. I mean, it's all part of the fall. But the immune system somehow just continues to adapt to threats even as we age, and right. Somehow these older people, they just have more of this killer T cell.
Well, I've always thought of like the immune system's just slowing down, wearing out, losing its ability to keep up with environmental, extrinsic, and even intrinsic forces that are leading us to the grave. But it's more than that. It's not that it's simply wearing out, because I mean certain part of it seems to be expanding.
Yeah. And, so they're trying to figure this thing out because they want to understand what the thing is targeting. And they don't know what the target was. It's one of the big unanswered questions. But here's the interesting clue. Researchers compared the receptors on these T cells against databases. And some receptor patterns resemble T cell receptors previously found in people with cancers, especially lung cancer. Yet these super centenarians themselves had no history of those cancers. So one possibility is that these people possess unusually effective immune surveillance, cells that identify and eliminate abnormal cells before a tumor can even get established. But there's still a lot to be learned from the study, but it is interesting. I mean, it's something to look at. Why are these people living so long? And then they found this change in, these higher prevalence of these particular types of T cells.
And Fred, I'm not sure if I heard it on this show or if I heard it elsewhere, but I did hear an immunotherapy researcher state that it's a possibility. He just said it's a possibility that your immune system defeats cancer on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe every day, he said. Maybe every day.
Yeah.
Just a possibility.
Is it maybe that interview that Bob had with Kevin Anderson back in the day? I think I missed that interview.
That could be. It sounds like something Kevin Anderson would have at least talked about. And it sounds like this research indicates that as we age, it's quite possible that cell mutations that lead to cancer become more prevalent. And so the immune system in a healthy centenarian and super centenarian apparently is able to keep upping its game. It's as if the super centenarian immune system sends in Ennis Cancer Freedom to take out DeJohnay Carrington so that Caitlin can go in for the layup. I mean, it seems like the immune system is upping its game as it perceives.
How do you say it? DeJohnay Carrington?
What's that now?
Yeah. DeJohnay Carrington. Did we say that right? So
who knows if we said that?
Who knows?
Right?
Yeah. She's a
it doesn't
person.
Matter,
All
Fred.
I know is she's a person who identifies as a black woman with blonde hair.
There you go. And Fred, who are we to define black skin or blonde hair or a woman, certainly? Or, Fred, who's to say what a DeJohnay is? I'm not. I don't think you're at liberty to do that either. In fact, I think you probably need to be canceled. Just for bringing that up.
Yeah.
That's out of line, Fred. For you to assert that her hair is blonde, what gives you that right?
Okay, so, Doug, let's close the show with your Big Bang joke. We better get off this WNBA topic.
Oh, the Big Bang! It's bigger than the Big Bang. It's three times bigger than the Big Bang because it involves three black holes. So, I'll just ask you, Fred, have you heard the one about three black holes?
I have not.
No, you know, the white, no. Three black holes walk into the bar, you know, and the bartender says, "Hey, where you guys been?" Right? And then, of course, the horse at the end of the bar reminds the bartender that, hey, nobody's ever actually seen a black hole. Right? You remember? And the bartender, of course, he realizes then it's a priest, a rabbi, and a theoretical chemist named Sebastian. And that's the punchline of the joke, Fred. That's
was that,
as far
was that
as
a
the joke
horse
goes.
Or a donkey? The end of the bar.
It was a donkey? No. In my joke, it was a horse. It's always a horse, isn't it?
Okay.
Anyway, a horse walks into a bar and the bartender says, "Hey, why the long face?" All right, that's a terrible old joke. I'm actually ripping off Shecky
that
Green.
So,
that's when you know you
so
gotta move on. But this is a real story, Fred. This is as reported in science.com. The headline: scientists find three supermassive black holes on the verge of collision inside a distant galaxy. So I just want to point out first, boys and girls, no one has ever observed a black hole, ever. Never, not one time. Every time they say they did, they're speculating. I just want to make that clear. So nobody's ever, that's why the horse said that. Nobody's ever seen a black hole. But what I want to report on, Fred, is the way this story is presented in the very first paragraph. So forget the headline that just blatantly lies and say that scientists have found these black holes as if they've actually seen them, which they have not. But listen to the first paragraph, Fred. A greedy galaxy that existed less than 1.3 billion years after the Big Bang is hoarding supermassive black holes. So just that first, what is that? One sentence, just one sentence. You know what I notice about that sentence, Fred, is that that sentence follows a carefully constructed formula that the education establishment has been using on you and me and our kids and our grandkids ever since third grade, fourth grade, whenever they first introduced this whole evolutionary Big Bang theory speculation. Most evolution and Big Bang science-y information, it's always introduced in the media, Fred, in the newspapers and online. It's always introduced and couched in this cutesy, literary, smirky way. And another thing,
it lures you in, right?
It lures you in because, Fred, what we might not remember is this is exactly how they sold it to us in third grade, was with cutesy language like hoarding and, it's an angry universe. It's a greedy universe. It's a selfish gene, right? All that cutesy language that can relate to a third to fifth grade kid. They still couch all these stories in that same way. And they also set what's called an extreme anchor. I don't know if you're familiar with an extreme anchor, Fred, but in sales, one of the tactics is to mention a price that's so much higher than what you're about to tell your prospect that it'll make your price look low. It's called setting an extreme anchor. And all of these stories, they do that too. They set an extreme anchor. Like right here, they say that this greedy galaxy existed less than 1.3 billion years after the Big Bang. And so they've already introduced the cutesy language, the third grade stuff. They've pulled you back to third grade. And then they've introduced this extreme anchor of 1.3 billion years. And then, of course, they're going to go on to tell you that that's actually a short time in this story. Anyway, this story, the headline, the wording, it's all part of this diabolical conspiracy of Satan's minions on this planet to deceive children. And when you read stories like this, just notice when they're trying to pull you back into your childhood with the cutesy and the angry and the greedy and the yep. selfish, all those adjectives that they introduce to trick us, Fred.
Yep. Well, and that's why we are here, Real Science Radio, Real That's right. Science Radio. When Bob and I came up with the original Real Science Friday, oh. we wanted real to be before science, because so much science that you're taught, like the, what you're talking about, isn't real. It's fake science.
That's
and
right.
And Doug, you know, you were talking about Extreme Anchor. So Sandy and I were at Vail for, I've never been there before. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I sent you pictures. We had really close encounter with the, not a bad close encounter, but with Black Bear and her cub.
Yeah. That
probably was, about 20 that was awesome. Yards away. I mean, we were yeah. on the back deck of a hotel that we weren't staying at, but we saw that that was a good vantage point to see the bear. Well, anyways, I digress. But the reason I bring this up is that extreme anchor you talked about while we were in Vail, I couldn't believe it. There's actually merchants that trying to sell you stuff kind of like you're in India or some foreign country or Mexico. No. They lured us in to their shop. It's some kind of, I don't know what it's called, skin treatment. And I only went in there because I was tired. We just showed up to Vail and I want to sit down. So
okay.
I'm sitting down. They're putting stuff on beneath my eyes and they're going to get rid of the wrinkles under my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, guess what? It's normally $1,500 for this little bottle that stuff you put underneath your eyes. But guess what, Doug? She's going to sell it to me for $499.
Wow. So you had to get two, right?
Because I was all over that. Yeah,
miss out on no. a deal like that.
It actually all it did was irritate my eyes. You know, yeah, it did look like it took away some wrinkles, but I know that's temporary. And yeah, anyways, Extreme Anchor. I mean, she's like, oh, if you don't buy it today, you know, you'll be back to $1,500 tomorrow. I was like, okay, well, I'll take my chances.
I love it. Well, and Fred, it's a psychological manipulation. Which, yep. I mean, unfortunately, in the world we live in, that's sales often involves psychological manipulation. But unfortunately, so does education. And yep. With sales, it's a little different. You know, the salesman, he's trying to get you to do something today that you don't have to do today. And in your case, Fred, you may never have to buy wrinkle cream for under your eyes because you look so fabulous all the time. So he's got to try to get you to buy something today that you don't even need. Right?
Yeah,
so you can
right.
understand
that's
why a salesman might use a little bit of psychological manipulation. He's got to feed his family, right?
Yep. So, speaking of psychological manipulation, and we probably need to wrap this up, but same thing happens a lot with Christians too, creationists. And that's why, Doug, we're doing that GPS experiment, because many Christians have bought into this whole psychological manipulation that GPS won't work without Einstein. So we've got exciting news on some recent early testing and early data is coming in really favorable with our experiment. We can't wait to share it with you, but it's still in progress. We've ordered a GPS receiver, so we're moving off the cell phone. We ran an experiment on a cell phone with an actual app that we built. We're now going to run it on a GPS receiver. And we will find out whether or not GPS really has to require relative time and Einsteinian type relativity to work.
Oh, That's huge, Fred, because relativity is one of the great sales jobs of all time.
It
stands shoulder to shoulder with unguided biological evolution, the Big Bang, relativity. They all stand up there in some of the great sales jobs of all history. And folks, you need to recognize, if you're reading science, if you're being educated, just be aware of when you're being manipulated psychologically, because you might be being sold.
Yes. As Richard Feynman said, the easiest person to fool is yourself. So
that's right. Be careful, folks.
Yep.
That's why you need to tune in.
That's right. So that's why we're here, Doug. And so for my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.